The thing about Torah is that it makes everything interesting.
And I love Bereshit. I could go over Bereshit 100 times.
All right. So,
everything about it is beautiful.
Well, you know what? In the course of 120 years, that's exactly what you do. You go over Bereshit 120 times. Mm-hmm. And more if you study it in depth. Now, so we have Lech Lecha. And Lech Lecha is about Avraham Avinu. And there is a sort of a pre-story to Lech Lecha. You know, there's what happened to Avraham before we meet him. In
the irony is, of course, that Judaism is all about family.
Yeah.
And it starts with somebody who is told, go away from your family.
Well, it's an interesting aspect because, you know, there's family and there's the family you leave and the family you create. And very often you have to leave in order to get into a different environment. And in fact, it's very interesting what you're saying, because the last line of the previous parsha, all of Terach's days were 205 years, and Terach died in Haran. And then it says, God said to Abraham, go for yourself, right? So Rashi tells us on that previous verse in last week's parsha, that in fact Terach died long after Avraham had left. So why does it mention his death before Avraham left? Trying to be politically correct. It doesn't want, the Torah does not want to say too openly that Avraham left his aged father and went off on his own accord. You know, so it looks as if Terach died before he left. But in fact, when you work out the ages and how old everyone was, he lived a long while after Avraham had left. Okay, so Millie, would you like to begin in Hebrew? Vayom Hashem el Avraham. Now, have you got the Hebrew text?
There.
Oh, this one. Vayomer Hashem el Avraham. Lech lecha me'artzecha u'memoladetcha u'mibet avicha el ha'aretz asher ar'eka. Ve'esecha legoy gadol ve'abarchecha.
Vagadla,
but this is feminine.
No, it's a special name for this. It's something like the cohortative, but it's not the cohortative, but it's that kind of form.
Vagadla, Shmecha. והיה ברכה, ועברך מברכך ומקללך האור, ונברכו בך כל משפחות האדמה.
Right, okay, do you want to translate that?
God said to Abraham, go away from your land, from your birthplace, and from your father's house, to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you great. You shall become a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and he who curses you, I will curse. All the families of the earth will be blessed through you.
Right. So, this is a very striking thing. All families of the earth will be blessed through you. So how do we understand that?
That it's really a global blessing for all kinds of people. That would probably include people in China too.
Mm-hmm.
Universal.
Universal.
Yes. It's universal.
But also maybe the goodness will flow through him to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't remember, recently I heard a lecture, a talk or something like that, which reminded me of something. There's a guy, Manish Sperber, from Galicia somewhere, and then became a communist eventually, and he wrote an autobiography in German, but God's Water Carriers. Mm-hmm. And the whole story was Jews are elected by God because they've got to do something.
Because?
They have to do something.
Right.
Right. So there are the priests. It's just like a father has got so many children and says, you get the firewood and you do this and you get the water, etc., etc. So nothing special, but it's your job. And together with the other stuff, the spread of monotheistic religion. So you have Abraham, and then you have Ishmael, and you've got 1.5 billion Muslims. And then you've got Christians, which ultimately believe in one God, which is 2 billion. But you've got 13 million Jews, or something like that. And does this prophecy make you a huge whatever? Yeah, I mean, by these numbers, yes. So this is how I see the relationship as well.
I think that makes very good sense. I mean, what Abraham brought and through him the Jewish people are supposed to keep alive is the constant, the universal concept of monotheism, yeah, and the way it relates to every human being. And Christianity and Islam embody it, reacting to Judaism, incorporating Judaism, drawing on Judaism, and then that monotheistic input is something valuable, I believe, for other peoples, other religions as well. They come in contact with monotheism. I remember there was some years ago there was some sort of thing about Hinduism, whether Hindus are idolaters or not, and a person I know who was close to the Hindu community in Birmingham, he said they're very indignant at being called idolaters. They don't want to be called idolaters.
But they are, basically.
Hmm?
But they are.
Well, yes, but many people, you know, want to change the way in which they're described or thought of, and I think monotheism has a powerful... I mean, what the sages say about polytheism of the Hindu type is that there is our God, the Creator, beyond all the other specific gods. In fact, my wife had a Hindu PhD student who was doing a thesis on Hindu attitudes to death. So, a very religious girl, and she, you know, went to this temple, that temple. But it came out, who decides whether someone lives or dies? You know, so it's not one of these temple gods. It's God. It's God the Creator, the ultimate God.
The Buddhists are also monotheists. I mean, they have only one Buddha.
No, but they don't believe in
God. It's not Buddha who, I mean, Buddha is more like...
not a God.
Yeah. Dharma would be, you know, the ultimate truth would be more, the ultimate reality.
You just said that the sages mentioned refer to Hinduism?
No, they don't refer to Hinduism, but they refer to idolaters in general. Kule elakade elakaya. They call him the God of gods. They call him the God of gods. Now, now maybe we could, I have here, I didn't bring the whole thing, but I have a, at the end of the pack, which is in English, I have an account by the Rambam about Abraham. And
the last page.
Yeah, that's right, the last two pages.
Chapter 11.
Before.
No, it's it says 72 Mishneh Torah.
Yes.
So go one page early. So before chapter 11. Yeah. Now,
72, go ahead.
Yeah, 72. Now, I didn't include the first page, unfortunately. I'll just recap what that is. This is from Mishneh Torah, Laws of Idolatry. Laws of Idolatry in the first volume, Sefer Amada, Book of Knowledge. So the beginning of that, the Rambam discusses how did idolatry begin. So it was in the time of Enosh that there began to be idolatry. So Enosh is one of the figures in the first few generations in the Bible after the flood. Now they believed, according to the Rambam, that the world is ruled by a energy which comes through the different constellations. And there is God. Do you have it, Saul? It's the last two pages in the pack.
Okay. It's just generally curious.
Right, yeah, good.
And disobedient.
Yeah. So the so they recognize at a certain stage they recognize God, but they saw that God sent energy through various channels, rather like the signs of the zodiac or the Shivim Sarim, the 70 princes, heavenly princes, as sort of spiritual channels of energy. So they began to think, let us bring an offering to this particular stream of energy or this particular constellation of stars, and we will get more benefit from it. And so that's what they began doing. And as a result, they began to forget that there is God above all the different constellations and streams of energy, and they just began focusing on those forces, those spiritual forces.
You know, I've seen synagogues in Greece and things like that, and they've always got the zodiac signs in them. And there's one in Jerusalem too. Yeah? Is this part of what you're saying now? Was that brought in?
Well, the zodiac does figure in Jewish thought.
But why give it such an important place in the synagogue? Is it part of what you're saying?
I mean, here he's speaking of the zodiac in a negative way.
Okay.
But nonetheless, there is a kind of a traditional Jewish awareness of the signs of the zodiac, and the each hour is under a particular zodiac sign. I mean, this is all part of Jewish thought. It comes up in the Talmud. So it's there, it's in place, you know. Why exactly the synagogues that you speak of have the zodiac, I don't know. But there's certainly enough rabbinic material about the zodiac. Yes. All right, so they begun that sort of making images of these zodiacal signs and other constellations. And in the course of time, would you like to try this? In the course of time?
In the course of time, there arose among men false prophets who asserted that God had commanded and expressly told them, worship that particular star or worship all the stars, offer up to it such and such sacrifices, pour out to it such and such libations, erect a temple to it, make a figure of it to which all the people, the women, children, and the rest of the folk shall bow down. The false prophet pointed out to them the figure which he had invented out of his own mind, and asserted that it was the figure of that particular star which had been shown him in his prophetic vision.
Right, so there we have the prophets of these idols, of these stars, coming forward with a whole, imagery and laws and rules. Alan, would you like to go on? And they began to make?
And then they began to make figures in temples under the trees, on the mountain tops and the hills. There they would assemble, bow down to the figures, and tell all the people that this particular figure conferred benefits and inflicted injuries, and that it was proper to worship and fear it. The priest would say to them, "Through this worship shall you increase and prosper. Do this and do not do that." Other impostors then sprang up. Those sprang up who declared that the star, celestial sphere or angel had communed with them and said to them, "Worship me in such and such fashion," had taught them in a definite ritual and said to them, "Do this and do not do that."
Right, so you have this whole spread of idolatrous practices and a cult around this star and image, and a cult about another star and image. And so as time gradually passed, Saul, do you want to take that?
And we are talking about Jews here.
No, it's the humanity before the Jews.
Oh, okay.
Before the flood.
It's actually after the
it's
flood.
It's after the flood.
It's after the flood.
Yeah, Abraham is after, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but the whole process...
No, but I thought this was referring to somebody else, not to Abraham.
It's before Abraham came on the scene. Yeah. It's preparing the scene for Abraham.
All right, okay.
As time gradually passed, the honored and revered name of God was forgotten by mankind, vanished from their lips and hearts, and was no longer known to them. All the common people and the women and children knew only the figure of wood and stone and the temple, the physique in which they had from their childhood, being trained to prostrate themselves to the figure, worship it, and swear by its name. Even the wise men, such as priests, a man of similar standing, also fancied that there was no other god but the stars and the spheres, for whose sake and in whose similitude these figures had been made. But the creator of the universe was known to none and recognized by none save a few solitary individuals such as Enosh, Methuselah, Noach, Shem, and Ever. The world moved on in this fashion until that pillar of the world, the patriarch Abraham, was born.
Right, so that's the atmosphere leading up to the birth of Abraham. And now we're going to have a change. Would you like to go on, please?
Noach also in on this list?
Noach knew about God, but he was one of the few who did. I mean, from this list, you can see that it's beginning the story before the flood, and then you have Noach and Shem, who is his son, and Eber, who is a great grandson. And but the idea of idolatry continues even after the flood. And then after him.
After Abraham was weaned, while still an infant, his mind began to reflect. By day and by night, he was thinking and wondering, how is it possible that this celestial sphere should continuously be guiding the world and have no one to guide it, cause it to turn round? For it cannot be that it turns round of itself.
Right, so the spheres are the spheres like the sun going round, the moon, the stars, and so on. And so there's this, what's making it go round? There must be an energy which is making it go round. It's so that concept. Now, the rabbis tell us that he looked at what people were worshipping at the time. So the way that Rashi puts it, some people were worshipping the sun, but when it was nighttime, the sun wasn't visible. Other people worshipped the moon, but when it was daytime, the moon wasn't visible. So Abraham began to think there must be some power which is beyond these specific powers of the sun and the moon and the other things that people say. There must be some greater unifying factor. And in fact, there's a tradition of a book called the Book of Creation, which the tradition is. This is teachings that Abraham communicated and were later written down. And this this idea of the book of creation, that the spiritual background to existence, that it goes beyond what we actually see.
I was always wondering what was in the book of creation. I've read something about it and I keep hearing it. I know it is referred to as Abraham's, but what's in it actually?
Well, it begins with the words, with 22 letters and 10 spherot.
So it's already...
God created the world with 32 paths of wisdom. The 22 letters and the 10 spherot are the 32 paths of wisdom. And it's not very long. You can buy it. You can probably download it, the whole thing, in an English translation.
Wow, already. Amazing what happened, yeah.
And it's certainly available in Hebrew. Sadia Gaon wrote a translation of it and commentary into Arabic, I believe. And
so in a way, it's got a prelude to Kabbalah.
Yes, yes.
Sadia Gaon translated it into Arabic from Hebrew.
Huh? I believe so, yes. Yeah, because he wrote several books in Arabic, communicating with the people of the time. And I think what he did with the book of creation is paragraph by paragraph, he translates it into Arabic and gives a commentary on it. His commentary was then translated into Hebrew, so the modern rabbinic editions of the book of creation have got Sadia Gaon's commentary on it.
So it discusses, it touches on the Ten Sefirot.
It uses this concept, the ten sefirot. Now, whether it means ten sefirot or ten digits, some people
say it means ten
numbers. It speaks about language. Since the world comes into existence through language, as we learn in the Torah, it speaks about the nature of language, and it's very interesting, the nature of language. There are five kinds of consonants in many European languages, and those five kinds are dentals, fricatives, gutturals, sibilants, and labials. And the Book of Creation has the same organization of different kinds of consonants. Bumaf, yes, Beit Vav Mem Peh are all one kind, Aleph Chet Ayin is another kind.
Yes.
It's a fascinating work. There's a quite comprehensive translation and notes by the same person, this English text, The Living Torah, by Arya Kaplan.
Ah, yes.
So Arya Kaplan also wrote a translation of the Book of Creation.
So this is attributed to Abraham.
The tradition is, yes, Meyuchas l'Avraham Avinu. That's
so really
attributed to.
It's before the Bible, before the Torah. We are talking about
before the Torah,
different. Right, fascinating.
Yeah.
And it was written originally in Hebrew?
Yes, it's written. I mean, I think one theory is it was written down in the Mishnaic period, so it looks like the Mishnah.
Right,
it's little paragraphs. It was passed down first of all, and then written down as little paragraphs, little Hebrew paragraphs, just like the Mishnah. Yeah, and it's it is a very interesting, work. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So here we have Abraham wondering about this. Now, one of the important things is that Abraham wondered. He thought. Other people, they were in an atmosphere of idolatry. But they didn't think about it. They just, people are worshipping idols. Fine, we'll worship idols. You know, this idol gives prosperity. Fine, we'll worship that idol. That one gives fruit of the womb. Okay, we'll worship that one. But people didn't reflect. Abraham comes over, in a sense, as the first philosopher, the person who's reflecting about this whole situation.
The way it's expressed here is quite funny, I find, because While still an infant, his mind began to reflect, as if you've got this tiny little body, this infant, and there's an independent mind already sitting in there and doing his own thing.
Sorry. Yes, well,
it's just the way it's expressed.
Well, you see, the Rambam, Maimonides, in his book Mishneh Torah, he's taking the entire Talmudic literature and re-presenting it in his Mishneh Torah. So the Talmud says, when Abraham was 3 years old, he began to discover God. He recognized God, but that process went on through his life and really crystallized around the age of 40. So, but even as a child, and sometimes there are very precocious children striking children with, analytic minds and the critical faculty. You know? Mm. So here you have Abraham as a child. So Michael, would you like to go on? He had no teacher.
He had no teacher, no one to instruct him in aught. He was submerged in awe of the Chaldees among silly idolaters. His father and mother and the entire population worshipped idols, and he worshipped with them. But his mind was busily working and reflecting until he had attained the way of truth, apprehended the correct line of thought, and knew that there is one God, that he guides the celestial sphere and created everything, and that among all that exists, there is no God besides him. He realized that men everywhere were in error, and that what had occasioned their error was that they worshipped the stars and the images so that the truth perished from their minds. Abraham was 40 years old when he recognized his creator.
Right, so here we have the process that now he's come to realize God is God, and God is the creator of the world, and all this star worship and sun worship, it's nonsense. So it's... that moment in thinking and discovery, you know, and you realize that the way that people have been looking at something is completely negative, and you've got a...
We used to be told, as a child, he destroyed his father's idols.
Yes.
But here this is only at the age of 40. Well, relatively 40 as a child.
Well, it went on. I mean, it began when he was very young, like an infant. And when he was 40, he recognized God in a more profound way. The story of Abraham wrecking the idols is almost part of his search. One of the ways the story is presented in the Midrash, his father Terach dealt in idols. That's... Now, of course...
Idol monger,
that's right. Now, if you deal in idols, that's likely to present a somewhat more critical attitude to idols than if you...
Just have one at home.
That's right, if you're just a subscriber, you know, because, this one is good for this, and that one is good for that. Oh, that's very popular now. That one used to be popular, but it's gone down on the... ratings.
This Christmas it's not so popular.
So Terach, the idol monger, goes out, leaving Abraham in the shop. And Abraham is filled with this enthusiasm, this anti-idolatrous enthusiasm, so takes an axe and chops up all the idols. Most of them are made of wood. He chops them up. And there's one big idol which he leaves, and he puts the axe, you know, in this idol's heart. So his father comes back and says, oh, good heaven, what's happened here? What is this? So Abraham said, look, they all began arguing, and the big one took an axe and chopped up all the others. The father said, what are you talking about? It's made of wood. So Abraham said, so why do you worship it? So what the Midrash doesn't say is, Terach says, shh, I'm just doing it to make a living.
For the business.
Business.
Yes. Business is business. You can tell he had Jewish.
That's right, yeah. But that, in a sense, it's like exploring the whole issue. You know, these idols do not have power. And even Terach, who worships idols or sells idols, also doesn't believe they have power. You know, Isaiah makes fun of the idol makers. It's a passage which describes how the idol maker goes through a whole ritual purification thing, and he fasts, and he takes a nice log of wood that he's going to use for making this idol, and the part of the log he fashions into this idol, you know, which obviously would sell very high price on, you know, Bond Street or going into a museum today. And with the other half of the log, he cooks breakfast. He chops it up and uses it for breakfast. You know, so Isaiah makes fun of it. So it's,
It's an interesting image, Abraham going around chopping up idols, because others have used that later on to start another religion, Christianity. Because Jesus goes into the temple and smashes up all the money changers.
And Nietzsche,
well, you can
who
say,
gets rid of all
ISIS
Twilight
also,
of the Idol.
Yeah.
ISIS in Iraq, they smashed also all the pre-Islam.
All the pre-Islam. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and before ISIS.
That's very yeah.
Taliban in Afghanistan.
Yeah, the Taliban.
The Taliban, they smashed the Buddha.
This destroyed Buddha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are all imitating Abraham.
Yeah.
But I mean, one of the signs of someone say that they are Jewish was that they were what you say IDB. IDB was illicit diamond buying, but in Jewish terms, it was in Dad's business.
What was it? Illicit diamond buying.
Illicit diamond. Yeah. IDB.
Right, okay. Now, having attained this knowledge, who's going?
Where are we?
Having attained.
Halfway down the page.
Yeah, just the middle of the page. Having attained.
Having attained the knowledge, he began to refute the inner habitats of Ur. Of the
Chaldees,
arguing with them and saying to them, curse you.
No, the course.
The course you are following is not the way of truth.
So in other words, he got into arguments with people, and he's telling them, you're not doing right. And so it's interesting, this, he does something about it. It's not just that he recognizes truth. He does something. He's determined that other people should recognize him.
Well, they would have seen him as a madman in the street at the time.
Well
it's interesting.
He had a solid argument.
Well, they did. He's going to come to what? Okay.
He's not a madman. He was dangerous.
Well, I could see, you know. When you see somebody preaching in the street today, don't we relate to it?
No, that's something else. But going around chopping up idols is threatening the power structure.
Debating. Debating.
These that are mentioned here still exist as a minority in Iraq today.
Yes?
Yeah.
And do they speak Aramaic?
No, they speak Arabic.
Uh-huh.
Maybe in the old times.
Yes?
Maybe
right.
At home.
They had to survive in that region. You had to speak Arabic. They really are.
Okay, so do you want to go on a bit, Alan? He broke the images.
He broke the images and commenced to entrust the people that it was not right to serve anyone but the God of the universe, to whom alone it was proper to bow down, offer up sacrifices and make libations.
Like a kind of sacrifice.
So that all human creatures might in the future know him, and that it was proper to destroy and shatter all the images so that the people might not err like these who thought that there was no God, but these images.
Right, and so he's on this battle to convince people. And it seems that he was beginning to be successful. Millie, would you like to go on? When you
try to find the wretched light because
well, you don't have the have the app, Millie. You've got you've got to download the app.
Can I have your phone, Michael?
Yeah, here's it.
Oh, so sorry.
I think I took it off mine because it used to use up too much battery.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. So can you do it for me?
No, she would.
So where are we? Sorry.
So we are.
When he had prevailed.
Yeah, when he prevailed.
When
that's
he
right.
Had, when he had prevailed over. I'm so sorry. One second. When he prevailed.
Over them with his arguments.
It's 12 lines up on page 73. 12 lines from the bottom.
When he prevailed over them with his argument, the king of the country sought to slay him. He was miraculously saved and immigrated to Haran. He then began to proclaim to the whole world with great power and to instruct the people that the entire universe had but one creator, and that him it was
right
to worship. He went from city to city and from kingdom to kingdom, calling and gathering together the inhabitants till he arrived in the land of Canaan. There too he proclaimed his message, as it is said, and he called there on the name of the Lord, God of the universe.
Right. Now, it's very interesting that the Midrash says this verse, and he called there on the name of the Lord, God of the universe. But the Midrash says, Al titcha vayikha, don't read it, he called, Ela vayakhi, he made other people call. Change it from the kal to the hifel.
Yeah.
So he made other people call on the name of God. He
converted.
That's right. He's spreading the concept of one God.
Proselytized.
You want to go on? When the people flocked to him.
When the people flocked to him and questioned him regarding his assertions, he would instruct each one according to his capacity till he had brought him to the way of
truth at the top.
To the way of truth. And thus thousands and tens of thousands joined him. These were the persons referred to in the phrase men of the house of Abraham.
Right, okay. And would you like to go on, Saul, please?
Abraham implanted in their heart this great doctrine, composed books on it, and taught it to Isaac, his son. Isaac sat them down, instructing and exhorting. He imparted the doctrine to Jacob and ordained him to teach it. He too sat them down, taught and morally strengthened all who joined him. The patriarch Jacob instructed all his sons, set apart Levi, appointed him head teacher and placed him in a college to teach the way of God and keep the charge of Abraham. He charged his son to appoint from the tribe of Levi one instructor after another, an uninterrupted succession, so that the doctrine might never be forgotten. And so it went on with ever increasing vigor among Jacob's children and their adherents till they became a people that knew God.
Right, now that's the interesting thing. It becomes a people that know God. So this awareness, which is something different to the rest of the world, is being passed down.
Is this the first time we hear the word Levi?
This is Maimonides writing about the life of Abraham. So the name Levi hasn't come up in the Torah at this point. In Lech Lecha, but this is not from the Bible. This is Maimonides talking about how idolatry began, how Abraham fought against idolatry, and then it's going to move into You know, can you do business with non-Jews on a day which is their idolatrous festive day? Because are you supporting idolatry by doing business with them or something like that?
When were they called Israelites for the first time?
B'nai Israel.
Yes,
well, you see,
after
Israel
struggle,
was,
after Jacob's
Jacob
struggle
with the angel.
Well, when Jacob struggled with the angel, he got the name Israel.
Yes, but after that, his descendants were called Israelite? Or
well, you see, to call his children B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, is just the factual statement about who they were.
I know. But
his 12 sons are the 12 sons of Israel.
But what would the Jews refer to? The Hebrews?
Right.
I'm
so
talking about biblical
in the, well, in the book of Exodus, they're referred to mostly as B'nai Israel.
Yeah.
But in you also find them spoken about as Hebrews. The Ever Hebrew means from across the river.
Yeah.
From the other side of the river.
But the translation of the word Hebrew is across the river.
Yes.
Yeah, Ever Yarden, but it's Ever is mentioned here. Is that connected, do you think, to the original word of the Hebrew?
I'm not sure. You see, there's Shem, and Shem's grandson is Eber.
Exactly.
So, but I don't know that the Jewish people called the Hebrews, particularly because of the Eber.
Because Shem is the Jewish descendant of Noah, right?
Yes, yeah, and the Semite.
The Semites.
Source of the Semites. Yeah, yeah. Shem, he's the son of Noah. There's three sons. Shem, Ham,
so,
and Japheth.
Islam today is also descended of Shem.
Yes, yes.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
So the Kohanim were the descendants of Aaron.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and they were all Levites. Weren't they?
Yeah. Levites.
Yes.
Yeah, they were from the tribe of Levi. They're a subset of the tribe of Levi.
Yeah. I plan to travel to Ur, by the way.
Wonderful.
It's in Turkey.
Oh, lovely.
And not so far from the border with Syria.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll bring back nice photos.
It's called Urfa.
Yes?
Yeah.
And are there any Jews there now?
No.
All right.
The Jews in Turkey are in a bad way now.
And is there a synagogue?
No.
In Turkey, a remote part of Turkey, where they had this monastery where they were still stuck basically in biblical times, and it was interesting, there was a documentary, their chanting of the prayers sounded so much like chanting in a synagogue.
That's interesting. Yeah. What was it like? Was it like Gregorian chants?
Yeah, well, like the same way you'd hear chanting in synagogue. Mm. It's very different to what you hear other Christian monks and what have you.
Mm. Yeah. So, Max, would you like to... when the Israelites had stayed a long time in Egypt... Now, here we're having a problem. Is the Israelites forgetting?
When Israel had stayed a long while in Egypt, they relapsed, learned the practice of their neighbors, like them worshipped idols, and like them worshipped idols, with the exception of the tribe of Levi, that steadfastly kept the charge of the patriarch. This tribe of Levi never practiced idolatry. The doctrine implanted by Abraham would, in a very short time, have been uprooted, and Jacob's descendants would have lapsed into error and perversity universally prevalent. But because of God's love for us, and because he kept the oath made to our ancestor Abraham, he appointed Moses to be our teacher and the teacher of all the prophets, and charged him with his mission. After Moses had begun to exercise his prophetic functions, and Israel had been chosen by the Almighty as his heritage, he crowned them with the precepts and showed them the way to worship him, and how to deal with idolatry and with those who go astray after it.
Right, right. So that is mapping out the life of Abraham, and how from Abraham eventually comes the Jewish people, and Moses, with given, endowed by God with the strength to communicate a whole relationship with God, extending through the generations, and here we are. That's the further along that chain. So now let's go back to Abraham. So we'll reach the second paragraph of the Sedra. Abraham went as God had directed him.
Vayelech
Avram kasher diber lav Hashem. So that's verse 4.
Vayelech Avraham kasher diber
Vayelech Avraham kasher diber elav Hashem, vayelech ito Lot, v'Avraham ben chamesh shanim v'shivim shana v'tzeto mecharan. Vayekach Avraham et Sarai ishto, ve'et Lot ben achiv, ve'et kol rechusham asher rechshu, et hanefesh asher asu becharan, ויצאו ללכת ארצה כנען, ויבואו ארצה כנען. ויעבור אברהם בארץ עד מקום שכם, עד אלון מורה והכנעני אז בארץ. וירא השם אל אברהם, ויאמר, לזרעך אתן את הארץ הזאת, ויבן שם מזבח להשם הנראה אליו.
Okay, would you like to translate this?
That's a problem with my eyes, so somebody else should, it's very small.
Right.
Abram went as God had directed him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. Abram took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all their belongings, as well as the people they had gathered, and they left, heading towards Canaan. When they came to Canaan, Abram traveled through the land as far as the area of Shechem, coming to the plain of Moriah. The Canaanites were then in the land.
Right, okay. Now, in order to see a little bit of detail about this, if we move to the end of the English pack, just before the whole thing that we read from Maimonides, we have a thing in Hebrew. And there's Hebrew with English translation. There's English translation, and then there's just Hebrew.
Page 48?
Yes, page 48. So let's take the second page. In fact,
I love this writing, so big.
let's take page 49.
Right.
And we're looking at verse 5. Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto. Right, you see that? Avram took Sarai his wife, ve'et Lot ben Achiv, and Lot his nephew, ve'et kol ruchusham asher rechashu, all the possessions they had made, ve'et hanefesh, and the souls asher asu b'charan, whom they had made in Haran. Now what does that mean? Let's look down at Rashi's commentary in the text below. You see that, Millie?
Yeah.
In the smaller text.
On the same page.
Hey.
Hey, yeah.
Sorry, yes. So
then
hey.
Hey. Asher asu b'charan. That they made in Haran, shehichnisam tachat kanfei Ashkina. They had brought them under the wings of the Shechina. In other words, they'd inspired them about the oneness of God. Avraham megaye et ha'anashim. Avraham, he works with the men. V'sarah megayeret ha'anashim. And Sarah, she communicates to the women. U'ma'ale aleim ha'katuv. And the verse considers it as if they had made these people because they had brought them under the wings of the Shekhinah. And then Rashi gives a simpler explanation, Upshoto shel mikra, but the simple literal meaning of this verse, Avadim u'shvachot shekanu lahem. It means male servants and female servants that they had bought. But much more powerful in the popular image is the first explanation, the people that they inspired, and especially the fact that Sarah is doing this together with her husband. That they are both communicating with people, and Sarah as well as Abraham, giving people this broader understanding of what life is all about and what is the real divine life force in the world.
The Rabbinitzer.
Sorry?
Rabbitson.
The Rabbitson.
The Rabbitson.
Like that's Chabad right. Today, the women do it and the men do it.
And Israel acquires wealth. Asa.
Asa, yeah.
Asa. An expression for acquiring and amassing.
Right. Okay, so let's find another passage. If we're looking in the Hebrew, I would suggest
what page?
I think let's go to page 61. Of the Hebrew text.
And it's interesting that you come across Pharaoh also here.
Yes.
When they took Sarah.
Yes. Yeah.
The war.
Oh, yeah, it's after that. So 61 is chapter 13, page, verse 14. Chapter 13, verse 14.
After Lot left.
Yeah, and that is on page 37 of the other text, which is a bit bigger. After Lot left him. Whose turn is it to read? Shaul.
So from which text? In Hebrew or in English?
Whichever. It would sound very nice in Hebrew. So can you do it on page 61?
Yes, of course.
Verse 14. Vahibimeno. Vahashem amar el
Avraham. Vahanshesdom.
It's just after that, on the same line.
Vahashem amar el Avraham, achrei pared lot meimo, sana enecha, ur'e min ha-makom asher ata sham tzafona v'negba v'ked mavayama. Ki et kol ha-aretz asher ata ro'e lecha et nena, ulezaracha ad olam. Ve'samti et zaracha k'afar ha-aretz asher im yuchal ish limnod et afar ha-aretz, גם זרעך ימנה. קום יתהלך בארץ לאורכה ולרוחבה, כי לך אתננה. ויעל אברהם ויבוא וישב בין עני ממרי אשר בחברון, ויבן שם מזבח להשם.
Right, okay, can you translate that, please?
Can I just say something before we translate? Ah, well, we have to translate for them for time.
This is...
After Lot left him.
You want to go to Lot?
This is what...
Translate.
Yeah.
After Lot left him, God said to Abram, raise your eyes and from the place where you are now, look to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offsprings forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth. If a man will be able to count all the grains of dust in the world, then your offspring also be accountable. Rise, walk the land through its length and breadth. I will give it all to you. Abraham moved on, and he came to settle in plains of Mamre in Hebron, and there he built an altar to God.
Right, thank you. So there we have that beautiful promise from God to Abraham that he's giving us the land of Israel. And
forever.
Yes, absolutely.
But,
yes.
This is a provocative question.
Yes.
Abraham had a son that was Ishmael, and this is a different thread. Does it mean that Ishmael is not part of that land?
Well,
because this is an argument probably also with the other side now.
with our cousins.
Yes. Ishmael at this point hasn't yet been born. And later in the Sedra.
But he would be his son. It's irrelevant.
Right.
And Isaac was not born either.
No, no. So then comes the question of what is considered Abraham's seed. Right? Lecha lezaracha. To you and to your seed.
Yeah.
Now, for that, I think that's a very important point, Millie, and I think let's move to the end of the Hebrew Sedra.
The verses I've just read, by the way, are the backbone of the Jewish settlers' ideology.
Absolutely.
This is the building of the
past. It's the background of all ideology about Jews and the land of Israel.
Yeah.
It's the sense of the Jewish connection to the land of Israel for thousands of years. Whenever, even if they're not in the land of Israel, Jews point to the land of Israel when they pray. There's a considerable, continuous thinking about the land of Israel.
Of course, we don't dispute that, but it just, there is...
Right.
Something that has to be kind of settled in...
Right, right, okay. So now, if we move to page 77 of the text in Hebrew, and here we have, he's just been given, right, what's happened, what we've missed out, is the way in which Abraham was grievous that he did not, was grieving that he did not have a son, and Sarah is not producing any children, and so Sarah says to him, look, take my slave girl, Hagar, and take her for a concubine, and sure enough, Hagar gets pregnant and bears the son Ishmael. So now you've got Abraham and Sarah, his wife, the concubine Hagar, and Ishmael. So now, towards the end of the Sedra, God tells Abraham that he should be circumcised. Right? Now this is a new thing. He's going to be circumcised. And then God said to Abraham, now that's in this, would you like to take this, Max, please? Mm-hmm. God said to Abraham.
God said to, at the top, yes. God said to Abraham, Sarah, your wife, do not call her by the name Sarah, for Sarah is her name. I will bless her and make her bear you a son. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of entire nations. Kings will be her descendants. Abraham fell on his face and laughed. He said to himself, can a 100-year-old man have children? Can Sarah, who is 90, give birth? To God, Abraham said, may it be granted that Ishmael live before you.
Right. So here is Abraham. He thinks it's all out of the ordinary that he should have a son with Sarah. They've gone through many years of married life. She hasn't given birth. The biology of women seems to have reverted to the way it is among normal women today. You wouldn't expect a 90-year-old woman to give birth or a 100-year-old man to sire a child. So, therefore, he says, let's leave Ishmael, let Ishmael live. So now God says, okay, Michael. Do you have that? That's verse 19.
Yeah.
God said, still your wife Sarah will give birth to a son. You must name him Isaac. I will keep my covenant with him as an eternal treaty for his descendants after him. I have also heard you with regard to Ishmael. I will bless him and make him fruitful, increasing his numbers very greatly. He will father 12 princes, and I will make him into a great nation. But I will keep my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you this time next year.
Right. So here we let's just have a look at that in the Hebrew. Verse 19. By your Melekim. God said, Aval, but Sarah Ishtecha Yoledet Lecha Ben. She will bear to you a son, and you should call him Yitzchak, Vahakimoti et briti ito levrit olam lezaro acharav. I will establish my covenant with him and his seed after him. All right, Yishmael, he will be a great nation. But verse 21, my covenant will be with Yitzchak, who Sarah is going to give birth to.
It's interesting that in the sentence before, he will father 12 princes.
Yes.
It's like the 12 sons of Jacob.
Yes, yes.
They will make him into a great nation.
Yes.
But remember a minute that he was sent to the desert.
Yeah.
And we
later.
Yeah, later. And we think that this is Arabia, so to speak.
Yeah, but they moved on from Arabia to other parts of the Middle East.
And they converted many people.
Yeah.
Eventually.
But there was at some point an issue with Muhammad, wasn't there? He wanted to be counted as one of the prophets.
Yes, wanted the Jewish people to recognize him as a prophet.
And the Jews of Saudi Arabia,
of Medina,
yeah, said no. And he slaughtered them. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And not only that, Medina, here I have this.
Should have said yes, and then Islam would not be
great. That's right. Well, if we if you excuse the simplicity of my right, so we have Medina is over here. Can you see him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And up here is Jerusalem. Now, at the beginning, he saw himself. I mean, the Quran is basically taking ideas from the Torah, some ideas from the rabbis, and so he saw himself as a prophet in the Jewish tradition. And so, therefore, based in Medina, he told his followers to pray towards Jerusalem. But when the Jews of Medina did not recognize him, and indeed he slaughtered them, he said, we're going to turn around, there's another sacred city, Mecca, down here, and that's the way we're going to point. So, directly turning their back on Jerusalem and now facing Mecca. So that was his volte face, literally.
And we know that from where?
That's a very good question. I know it from a history book.
But
the question is, where is the history book?
But they were facing Jerusalem before.
Yes.
Yeah.
I understand.
Like the Jews. Yeah. They face Jerusalem like
but
the Jews.
Aren't they still, I think they still have certain prayers, but they still face Jerusalem.
No, they face east from here.
If you go to Heathrow Airport, they face east. But it's Mecca, so the closer you get, it becomes more distinct.
And yet Jerusalem is not mentioned at all in the Quran.
Right.
So what was this night dream that he had, that he was over Jerusalem? Wasn't it in the Quran?
No, that's not in the Quran.
I don't think so.
No, I think that's
in... They had Burak
with the horse.
Yeah.
I think that's in a hadith or something. That's in a...
The Talmud of the Quran.
That's right, the oral law.
The Talmud or the Mishnah?
The Hadith.
Well, there we have Abraham. Mm-hmm. And.
Nice to meet you, Abraham.
Yeah.
So, according to Maimonides, he was much more than what is said about him in the Torah.
Well, he is he's the beginning of the whole relationship with Hashem in a very direct way. Avraham or Avi. Avraham who loves me and that God loves him. And in the Rambam's book of mitzvot, he said mitzvah number one is to love. Mitzvah number one is to believe in God, to know that God exists. Mitzvah number two is to know that God is one. Mitzvah number three is to love God. And then he says, and if you love God, you will try to get other people to love God as well, like Abraham did. And he repeats a lot of this material about Abraham loving
because
God.
Because we always give credit to Moses for all that.
Well, you see, Moses is more specifically about giving the Torah to the Jewish people.
Codifying it.
And presenting it as the Torah, whereas Abraham is the basic concept of the relationship of humanity. That's
all
it, humanity
yes.
with God.
It's a much more, it's bigger.
Yep, okay.
Yisholkoch.
Thank you.
Thank you.